is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The news from Ukraine is drones, drones, drones. Drones purchased or bartered by the Russian forces from Iran. Shahed 136 is the one that's mentioned always, and it's called a suicide drone. However, what is the defense from drones? We see routinely of reports from Kyiv of 12 of 13 or 44 of 50 drones brought down. The Shahed 136 is said to be slow. It's propeller-driven. It might even be noisy, but still, how do you bring it down with an anti-missile defense? I welcome Patrick Tucker. He is the Defense One technology editor, and he introduces us not only to anti-drone equipment that's flowing into Ukraine from all parts of NATO, but also a concern for where is it all going and how is it being used. Patrick, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Of course, I went immediately to the one called Vampires. How could I not? Vehicle agnostic modular palletized ISR rocket equipment. That doesn't sound like it's going to bring down the Shahed 136, the slow-moving, the side of Piper Cub of drones. All this anti-drone equipment, is it time-tested, or is this all new stuff? Drones are so new on the battlefield. Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, these are mostly tested against rockets and other things that fly in a normalized flight path, but you can apply them to something like a loitering munition, which is what the Shahed is. It's basically a drone that flies around, can take a flight path, but instead of shooting a missile from itself, it becomes the missile and it dives into its target. So the U.S. has these as well, and we've provided them to Ukraine. Switchblade drones as the ones that we provided to Ukraine. But in the hands of the Russians, these Iranian suicide drones have been wreaking havoc on Ukraine's energy infrastructure, which is a little bit hard to defend. So the Defense Department made a big announcement of additional aid going to Ukraine, including air defense gear and eight national advanced surface-to-air missile systems, or NASAMS, in addition to the Vampires, which are basically interceptors, rocket interceptors that drive around the back of a truck. There are certainly a huge need for more air defense systems that can be applied to drones. The allies and partners have already so sent German Iris-Ts and a Slovakian S-300 anti-aircraft radar and missile battery. And that'll certainly take out a Shahed, but at the cost of an S-300 standard missile versus one of these $18,000 Iranian drones, you're not going to get good price parity. So one of the things that Ukraine has said that they're doing is trying to outfit the Bayraktar drones that they are currently using for strike with air-to-air missile systems is the thing that they have said very recently. So essentially you would have drone wars going on over portions of Ukraine where you have loitering munitions, possibly Iranian, but operated by Russians with Iranian training. And then you would have Turkish drones in the hands of the Ukrainians that are targeting them in the air. So that is coming to this conflict in the very near future. But there's a lot of other types of drone defenses that could be employed here. There's microwave and jamming techniques, cyber techniques. And so all of those are going to play just a growing part of this conflict as these Iranian drones continue to devastate or create widespread, in the words of a senior military official the other day, widespread effects on Ukraine's energy infrastructure.
What this reminds me of, Patrick, when I was very young, I believe I was taken to an event, I think it was in Ohio, might have been in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. of what you would call amateurs flying model aircraft, engines in model aircraft, and the novelty was they were remote controlled, radio controlled. That's what it feels like we're doing. We're reinventing a model aircraft, but these model aircraft have a sting. So is there a sense of invention going on around drones put together last night in my workshop?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The degree to which mostly the Ukrainians are modifying commercial off-the-shelf drones to achieve new warfare techniques It's something that I think is going to be part of military training for decades to come. If you look at it, earlier in the fall, the different strikes that occurred on military installations in Crimea, there's a runway near Setia. There were attacks on Sevastopol. There was a lot of speculation by the Western military observing community that someone had finally figured out how to get Ukrainians' long-range ATACMS missiles, which the U.S. has said that they wouldn't do. Turns out it was a drone that the Ukrainian Special Operations Forces purchased off of Alibaba, which is the Chinese version of Amazon, for about $8,000, and then modified it so that it could carry strike equipment. And they used that to destroy different targets on Crimea, which is far enough away from the front line that they couldn't hit it with the HIMARS missiles that the U.S. had been providing them. So that's just one example of how fast the innovation cycle in this conflict is, particularly around drones. And I think you're going to see that that pace continue, if not accelerate, especially as the Ukrainians seek to diversify their holdings, their arsenal, beyond just the Bayraktar drones, because there's only so many that Turkey can put out. And there's now competition. Talked a couple weeks ago with a Cyprus-based drone manufacturer. And they provide drones to Ukraine. Originally, these were for use by special operations forces in places like Africa, where it was presumed that the adversary wasn't going to have particularly advanced air defenses, the ability to jam, to interfere with the steering of drones, that you'd be dealing with an adversary like Boko Haram. And what this drone manufacturer said is that actually the Russian capabilities right now are in line with what you would expect out of Boko Haram. So everything that you've heard about Russian electromagnetic warfare, that's certainly not the what's characteristic on the ground in Ukraine in most places. So that devastating capability to knock down drones and use electronic warfare, it's really not present in a lot of places. And what this drone manufacturer said is that what they're able to do is sell the drones to Ukraine that are very resistant against electromagnetic interference. But then it's the Ukrainians, because of different laws about transferring weapons, it's the Ukrainians that then modify them to carry missiles. So all of that is being done on the front lines in Ukraine by engineers that are also fighting the fight.
We also come to a report you give us of a winner, Army National Guard Sergeant Mickey Reeve, a winner of the CENTCOM's Innovation Oasis competition. He has developed, software to allow members of the U.S. military to train on a variety of drone and counter-drone systems across a wide landscape. So we've all, and you gave it the clever title of One Counter Drone Trainer to Rule Them All, which I reward, Patrick. That sense of humor when related to military affairs is most welcome. So what we see is that the U.S. Defense Department is also aware that there's a variety of drones and counter drones that you have to train on, but there's so many, we need some uniformity. Is that successful now? Are they feeling more comfortable about the variety?
I think there's a new office that's in charge of counter UAS, unmanned aerial system warfare. There's a couple of different efforts to really get a sense of the wide spectrum of things. But this particular innovation came really from the bottom up. CENTCOM is running this innovation oasis. It's sort of linked to something that the 101st Airborne Division out of Fort Bragg was doing, where they try to elevate solutions to warfare problems that are coming from actual operators on the ground, because they have a really good sense of course, what they're facing. And often now they have software or other engineering skills that can be brought to bear directly on that problem, as opposed to going to a contractor. So, yes, what Sergeant Mickey Reeve did observe is that depending on where you are, you're supposed to train on this wide variety of different anti-drone systems. And when you go to the front lines, you have to keep that training up. But because it's so complex to train on all of these systems, it really results in a lag. And so, you have this kind of situation where people are on forward operating bases. They might have a lot of anti-drone equipment sitting around. They might have several different systems to guard the base, but because it's so difficult to keep up your training on all of them, they're not able to use those to best effect. And so what this does is basically jump over all of the different intellectual property issues and interface issues that all of the individual makers have and make it so that you can train on a whole bunch of them at once. And so he won this contest. And so, you know, you can see the relevance of something like this in Ukraine. But given that the Iranian drones are really the thing that's beginning to reshape the battlefield a little bit, at least in the last couple of weeks, you can also see its relevance to CENTCOM, particularly in the future. And obviously, pretty much any place where there's any conflict in the future, I think that armed drones, maybe very cheaply or easily armed drones, are going to be a huge characteristic feature. And so this shows that the U.S., in an attempt to get ahead of that, really supported this, you know, burgeoning industry that produced a lot of different solutions. And I think in the years ahead, you're going to see some consolidation of that. But at the very least, what we need now is some consolidation in the training efforts so that you don't have to go to school to become a master, you know, drone defeater in order to do your regular job on any forward operating base.
The State Department and the Defense Department have a fresh concern about tracking equipment, weapons, and systems that are flowing to Ukraine. And I take it that this has to do with drones in particular. But it appears that the State Department has answered this to say everything is being tracked. Do I read that correctly?
Well, so what they've announced is a new effort to do more and better on-the-ground tracking of stuff that's been delivered to Ukraine. And that follows an announcement that does come out of the State Department basically saying that we now have a policy to restart online visits to make sure that aid is being used correctly. This is becoming an issue mostly because U.S. lawmakers are beginning to complain about the fact that the Pentagon isn't doing very much to oversee where weapons in Ukraine are going. And so the State Department has released a plan to, quote, counter illicit diversion of weapons given to Ukraine. But if you go to Poland, if you go to Frankfurt, Germany, where the U.S. and the Brits and a consortium of different Ukrainian allies are finding equipment, finding weapons, finding ammo to send to Ukraine and sending it. You hear from the Ukrainians that they shoot these as quickly as they receive them. So one thing that the senior defense official that spoke to reporters on Friday really wanted to highlight is there is no evidence right now that any of the aid that is being sent to Ukraine is being used for anything other than fighting the Russians. They need much more than we're giving them. And there isn't like sort of like a drop to spare. There isn't a shell to spare, as you could say. It's different from the efforts that the U.S. undertook in places like Afghanistan, where basically because of, and I think, you know, history bears this out, because of two decades of endemic corruption, you wound up losing pieces of aid, weaponry that the United States had awarded the government there. This situation is completely different. So there is, however, a bit of a problem. It's not on the side of the Ukrainians. It's actually on the side of the United States. The Office of the Inspector General has said, and this was sort of a startling thing, has said that the Pentagon is not using the type of software that would make it much easier for the Office of the Inspector General to really track what's going on. And they would like the Pentagon to begin using that. But I've talked to folks that are hanging out with the 82nd Airborne, that are with the 101st, that are helping to lead this effort to get weapons and ammunition into Ukraine. And they will tell you that, hey, if they have to go through some third-party software thing in order to do their jobs, it's going to slow down how quickly they can get stuff from Germany, right, or right, Spain, or the UK to Ukraine, and that's going to cost lives. So this is an issue that has to be dealt with, but it's really about U.S. politicians. It's about U.S. means for tracking this stuff. No one has said that they've seen anything out of Ukraine to suggest that there's any illegal diversion, but the U.S. has to get our receipts in order to appease politicians.
Patrick Tucker, Defense One technology editor. We're going to Romania with Patrick. I'm John Battle.